Welcome, everybody. It is BNP Weekly episode 118. We are closing in 200 pretty soon. No, just kidding.
Eventually, yeah.
Only 82 left. So then we're in 200. Or now it is March 15th, 2021. We're in the halfway of March and we still have snow, which is so frustrating because I would love to get to rollerblading outside. But hey, sooner or later, that happens at some point.
No snow here.
I know.
Here, pull over.
A year ago, we didn't have snow the whole winter, but now. Anyway, so in the BNP Weekly, we talk about always latest on the Microsoft 365 platform and the UX and capability perspective as a whole. So, but typically, we always have a visitor. But before we go there, just briefly, we should do some scripting on this thing. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft, and with me as a co-host is Valdek. Throw it to you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Maslikas. I am cloud developer advocate for Microsoft 365. And as Vesa tried to say, today we have a guest. With us.
You can do the translations from English to English.
Yes. So. It absorbs eventually. Anyways, from the UK, MVP, Veronique Langell. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I didn't expect to be part of this, but I'm very, very happy.
You are an MVP. You're working in the community side, so why not? So, and we absolutely want to showcase our MVPs who are contributing in the community side of the house, which is one of the, let's say, measurements of being an MVP, right? So, but you are actually two, and you have two MVPs, correct? Can you talk about your specialties? So,
yeah, so I'm a dual MVP, and it is for SharePoint and PowerShell. So I got my first MVP on October 2018, and so because it's renewed on the 1st of July, so I had like 18 months instead of a year, and then I got the dual MVP on my second year. So yeah, I was very happy with that.
That is very cool.
So what kind of things do you actually do then for a living? What do you do for a living?
Power apps.
Okay.
So who's my best friend? So I'm a solution architect at CPS, who's a gold Microsoft partner in the UK. I do live in Scotland myself. And I'm sure you guessed, but I'm French. But I'm in Scotland for 8 years now. And before that, I was living in Ireland, in south of Ireland, for almost 5 years as well. So I left France, a few years now. Like I said, I'm a solution architect, so I do mainly, I can do workshops, I can do design solutions for Microsoft 365. That's my area. I do a little bit of Power Platform, not that much, but, you know.
I think everybody's doing a little bit of Power Platform nowadays, which is good. So
there's a start for everything. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. And on my spare time, usually, if it's, you know, not in lockdown situation, I like to do photography and stuff like that. And it's a very nice place in Scotland to go for that. So so that's well.
It's a lot of beautiful places in Scotland for the photographing. Absolutely.
So. Yep.
Are you living in Edinburgh then?
In Glasgow. I'm in Glasgow.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you end up actually, just out of curiosity, because you said you're originally from French and then you go to the Ireland and then you go to Scotland. How did that happen?
I left France. Yes. Well, actually not.
suspense.
So I left France because I wanted to learn English and I always wanted to be proficient in English. And so I left and went to Ireland. And then I found a job in IT. That's when I started in IT in a big company. And then back in 2013, they asked me if I was interested in going to Scotland with that same company. And I said, why not? And that's how I actually got in Scotland.
Cool.
And then in Scotland, is the company having office in Glasgow then? And you would normally go there unless, except within the, it's again March, so for the past year.
It's still March.
It's still March.
Although although the way it happens working from home, because I'm a home worker anyway, I never go to the office. And so the way it happened is because it's a big company. And so the offices were already full. And so I started to work from home and it just, you know, continued like that. And that's my preference anyway. I like to work from home. I feel more, you know, proficient and productive because obviously after 8 years, you have your own setup and yep. things like that. And I feel like there's too much distraction when you're in an office. But yeah, you know, it's not for everybody, let's say.
You need to be able to concentrate and deliver without somebody telling you all the time what you need to deliver to be able to work from home. So,
you know, just you get all those people, like when you're in an open space and you get all those people, you know, going for a coffee, walking, discussing and stuff like that. And you know, it's discipline when you're working from home, but that's the way I like it myself.
A lot of cultural thing. In Finland, people don't actually talk in office. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Just talking.
So why do you go to offices anyway, right? Like if you don't talk there, like...
Just kidding. Just kidding. Bad joke.
Well, actually not.
I can't remember when I was last time in the local Microsoft office as well. So I can't even remember when I was last time in my own office, which would be Redmond nowadays. This is weird. Oh, yeah. The world has changed so much. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know when I was in the office the last time, when I was ever in the office. I think that was 2 years already, a year or like a long time anyway.
Yeah, but of course it's different when you actually have had your time to build your own remote working office and you prepared your house for it, and then moving into this remote working mode is different than just claiming a spot in the claiming a spot in the kitchen. It's completely different situation.
Absolutely.
Now, coming back, Veronique, on your thing, you basically said that you're a technical architect in Microsoft 365. Can you explain people what does that actually mean for those who are not familiar?
So like I said, my area is more Microsoft 365 as a platform. So that would be because of my area is obviously SharePoint and PowerShell. So that would be you have customers coming to you and they want to do, you know, a migration or they want to do something in SharePoint. So you would design solutions with the constraint that you would have in SharePoint, because we obviously have some limits, and try to design a solution that would fit and present to the customers for them to actually obviously take decisions and see that's the way they want. Not most of the time, but sometimes it's still new to customers, Microsoft 365. And obviously, because that's a bundle, they don't actually know what's the implication, what are the links, like, you know, Microsoft 365 groups, for instance. And what I tried to say as well is that obviously SharePoint is more than just a storage location. And it's not somewhere where you just dump your files and, you know, hope for the best. So I know that, you know, SharePoint is just so big. I really love SharePoint. It's just so big and so many features and things like that, that it gets this reputation of being very complicated. And so you're trying to demystify this, and this is what you can do. This is what you have. Back in the day when it was obviously SharePoint on-prem, licensing was very expensive. So you would hope that you just do not want to just dump your files and you know, do the things like you were doing with file shares and things like that. So yeah, so that's it. Creating a solution with when you have all the requirements and trying to explain to the customers what you can have and make the most of the platform.
Yep, makes perfect sense. So how have you seen the last year related then on Teams versus SharePoint? Because at some point that was a kind of a, let's say, a debate. Are you going to choose SharePoint? Are you going to use Teams? Which is kind of awkward as well. And feel free to be as open as possible because you're clearly reacting on something.
Yeah, I mean, we know there's a big push from Microsoft, you know, Teams everywhere. I wrote an article on the Microsoft PNP docs about Teams versus, you know, SharePoint, and you still have some customers. I want to store my document in Teams or in SharePoint. And you're like, well, you know, in the background, it's the same thing. So you don't want to you know, burden them with the technical details, and just the fact that you just say, okay, behind Teams, it's SharePoint. So whatever you do in SharePoint, it would be reflected and blah blah blah. So, but I wouldn't say that, you know, Teams is the solution to everything. But, you know, do you want collaboration? Yes or no? Are you more familiar and comfortable with Teams or within SharePoint? Because you still have some people who would say, oh, no, I'm used to SharePoint. I prefer there because I don't know about Teams. Because you still have some people, even after, you know, a few years and COVID and things like that, that don't know really about Teams still. So, I like to make this subtle difference, you know, or just say that it in the background it's still going into SharePoint.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes absolutely sense. What about on the let's say from a technical implementation side? Have you seen any trends which are visible in your side of the world, so to say? Where are we heading, and what kind of things people are asking?
Well, people are asking obviously for a lot of Teams. So once you explain what I just said about the technical thing and things like that, I think you still need to be aware that in Teams, I know probably Microsoft is making a lot of progress in that, but if you want to do something more complex with your files, metadata and things like that, this is not still in Teams. So you can have the basics in Teams going into SharePoint. It's inevitable, I think. So I would say don't neglect the training that you would give to your users for SharePoint, and don't focus solely on Microsoft Teams.
The one thing that I'm interested is also, like, in the past we used to have, like, if a customer would come to us and would say, like, hey, I want to have this intranet, and then we would, like, there were a few things that we could do out of the box, but there was a big part that we had to custom build. Do you see that still being the case nowadays, or is it become less and customers are trying to stick more to the things that are available to them out of the box?
So there's a lot of things that are now out of the box in SharePoint Online compared to what we had before. And so if customers are coming to build a new intranet, you just show them what they have, like, out of the box. It's completely different nowadays, nothing to do with what you had in SharePoint 2013 or 2016 and so on. So I think the difficulty here would be for customers to have developers in-house. Now,
right.
What they used to be doing on-prem, they could, it's on-prem. Now, it's a little bit limited in SharePoint Online from a custom code perspective. But at the same time, we already have something decent out of the box with SharePoint Online. Now, I also mentioned the PNP thing, the web parts and things like that, because obviously you have some amazing web parts out there. But you have to specify, the only caveat is that it's community-driven. If you're happy with that, or if you have developers that can make the changes to those web parts, then, you know, go for it.
Yeah. But of course, it's also a partner opportunity on taking those web parts and then extending them and then putting them as part of their offering and then providing support. And that's certainly one of the objectives of all of the open source work what we do within the Microsoft. So it's not really for competing with partners, rather showing the art of possible and then, hey, here's the starting point, and just take it and make it better, and then make millions out of it. Yay! And everybody wins. So, hopefully. But how do but how do you see, Veronique, on the partner, let's say partner opportunity? Are we with the transition to the cloud, and we've been on this transition to the cloud for a long time? For some, it might be like supernatural that we are already in the cloud. So why do we always talk about the transition to the cloud? But do we actually see that the partner opportunities are getting less or larger considering the growth of Microsoft 365 as well? So how do you see your role as a solution architect to evolve and then the partner impact on the partner revenue or business?
No, I think it's getting bigger because this conception that even if Microsoft 365 is around for a while now, it doesn't mean that people know about it. You still have some people who are, you know, on-prem because they probably really need to, or are not ready to make the jump fully, even though, you know, they don't have any top secret data or things like that. But it requires obviously a lot of planning and things like that. So I think it's actually growing because they need, you know, guidance. What do I have? Usually you have some customers and they come, either they have middle knowledge or not knowledge at all. And in that case, they would just look for guidance. What do I have with Microsoft 365? Because in my license, I'm paying for what? Well, in that case, okay, you want to migrate to SharePoint, for example, but look at everything you have with Microsoft 365 for the same price, for instance. Yeah. So I think it's growing and they just need a little bit of guidance on, you know, step by step, what they can use with Microsoft 365. It doesn't mean you have to go crazy all of a sudden and enable everything and it's complete chaos. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's more of know where you are. Okay, you have your tenant, but have you just, you know, freedom, your users have freedoms to use absolutely everything, and it's going to be a total mess when we're going to migrate your things. You know, just things like that. It's growing, but COVID has just precipitated absolutely everything. But yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, the COVID obviously forced a lot of companies to jump on the cloud, but then not being necessarily ready for it. And now people are kind of looking around and, okay, so now that we made the jump forcefully, what can I do now? Okay, so what's available actually? So, but it's taking quite a long time to stabilize on that jump for sure. So, but well, we'll see. I think the obviously COVID has evolved the adaption for sure across all of the cloud services. But then is it actually using, is it impacting positively or negatively on a partner opportunities? That's an interesting discussion point as well, because its extensibility wasn't really a focus area last year, because it was basically, let's get to the cloud or otherwise we can't talk to the people. So,
well, but I guess on the other hand, like, it is that, but then on the other hand, you can think that, yes, you go to the cloud, but then, like, you have to have processes, rules. You have to have things that match the work that you do. So you cannot just go there, enable things, and it works, and you can just go, right? So, like, even then, yes, like, maybe there is less room for that. But on the other hand, like, it's just a change, right? And it's a change, I think, both to customers, but also to partners, right? Just think like, okay, so, like, this new reality, what can we do here? So it's just, I think it's maybe not in terms of less or more, but it's different. It's a change. And I think it might still take a while for all of us to find the balance and find the sweet spot for everybody.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Absolutely. We are all on this journey together. I think Microsoft is learning, everybody else is learning, the cloud providers in general are learning, and then the partners and customers are learning, and then we know where we're heading. So,
yeah.
Cute. Should we do the articles right now? Jump to the articles and then come back on the discussion. Or Waldeck, anything else on your
mind? Let's. No, do the articles. I mean, there's tons on my mind, but bearing the time.
Yes. Let me share my screen. Whenever the screen sharing, I've been running through some eat dog fooding builds recently, and this slightly slow.
I have no problems on the Mac.
Yes.
The oldest joke, huh?
1 second.
Well, no, I have my fair share of issues with Mac. I mean, I don't know if it's Mac, but anyways.
Anyway, so let's do some articles. So, few new articles on the Microsoft 365 developer side of the house. So, for device capabilities developers can utilize for Microsoft Teams mobile apps. And this is basically just pinpointing different scenarios, for example, for capturing media and pictures from a mobile, because mobile is growing to be more and more as a, let's say, important extensibility or important platform capability for sure. So, people don't necessarily carry their laptops with them, but everybody has a mobile. So, if you can access your solutions and services from there, that's a big opportunity. device location.
And I think, and also another thing is, right, that you might think like, well, everybody works at home, right? So isn't everybody behind their desk? Well, maybe they're even, it's less obvious when people are not, because you cannot see them. You cannot see like where everybody is. So maybe even the more need for mobile.
Absolutely. And that's what this article is all about. So kind of a pinpointing capabilities, which are part of the Teams JavaScript SDK 1.9, so you can actually scan stuff, QR codes and all of that stuff. So really, really cool stuff which is available. Now, on the Microsoft Craft Mailback series, so Microsoft Craft in electron applications using Microsoft Craft Toolkit, so really cool setup as well. So just walking through how to get started using the Electron provider for Microsoft Craft Toolkit, which was pretty recently released as part of the Microsoft Craft 1.2, I think 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago.
2.1.
There
was a one and a two. Which order?
2.1. Yes, 2.1. Yes, absolutely. What did I say? Yeah, the new thing in 2.1 was actually Electron. That was the whole new thing. That's why and then obviously a few additional improvements in general as well. And so this really walks through the process of how to set up things and then how you can run the things, how you can sign in and authenticate against your tenant, and then you're running the Electron application together with Microsoft Craft Toolkit controls. As an example, I think this is the task control. Yes, it is, what's actually being rendered there. But super, super, super easy to get started and building stuff for Microsoft Craft. Now, and that's actually the announcement related on that. So as part of the 1.2 Craft Toolkit. 2.1. I'm visualizing 2.1, but I'm saying 1.2. That's actually pretty weird. So because I knew that it's 2.1, but I said 1.1. Okay, anyway. So
2.1.
Good. Okay, let's get rid of that. And those who are wondering, that's Zoomit. It's the best possible ever software for anybody to do drawings live in Windows.
On Windows.
It doesn't work. Yes, exactly. Yes. Thank you, Waltek. Always remembering on that. Good. yes. Now, on the SharePoint blog, Mark Cashman had a good blog post related on GlobalCon 5. I think this is already fifth or fourth GlobalCon within a year. And there's a new set of, it's happening pretty soon on March 16th to 18th, and a lot of great content from a good set of presenters. Mark is doing the keynote, at least in quotes, going to the and focusing on the modern workplace and just really focusing through what's the latest and greatest and possible. But looking under the group of people who are presenting, it's a really great group of MVPs, from old school Robert Bogue to Peter Venstra and Daniel Christian, Power Platform, and all of that stuff. Emily Mancini, a lot of great capabilities for sure, and sessions. Now, on the Power Automate side, so there was 11 new connectors released in February 2021. So connectors for different solutions. So there's a good list of things. So slightly delayed, it's March 11th already, but it's good to have a summary list of what is new in a monthly basis, so people know how things are evolving. Then there was this interesting story related on how to implement document automation in your business with Microsoft Power Platform, which actually is some sense kind of a similar thing as SharePoint Syntex, but Syntex has slightly different additional capabilities, but this is walking through the basic authentication and identification of information from the documents and kind of walking through that story, how to get started on building stuff. And then SharePoint Syntex is more abstract layer, so making things even easier for making all of this happen. So really cool stuff as well. Now, some new articles from the community side of Microsoft 365, community side of the house. So we had the March update coming out last week, a massively long blog post always walking through what has happened within the past month. It just takes ages to write all of this stuff, but basically walking through the latest samples, articles, videos, and calling out all of the people who are contributing. A super big part of actually calling out and giving credits for the people. The list of people who've been active is just growing every single month.
And it's really cool, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Absolutely. And the group of companies is getting larger and larger as well, so which is really, really, really great. So. So we'll keep on certainly doing this monthly summaries, at least to calling out the people who contributed. It's maybe one thing to talk about how much value does it actually give to list all of the new samples and all of that stuff. What's your take actually, Veronique? I'm putting you on the spot on this.
No, I think it's actually great because you have so many places where you have all those samples. So the list samples, you have the SPFX web parts and things like that. So I think it's a great way to just in one place have all the directions you can go to. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's useful.
Cool. So we need to keep on doing this in the future as well. So I'm just trying to reduce the amount of work. No, just
nope, not reducing. Nope.
No.
Oh, but anyway, there is this another repo that we need to add in here.
Yeah. It's quite a few repos what we have. So which is good. It's a positive platform to have too much content. So now a few other things. So this is right now released in kind of a soft launch. So this is a new thing which we haven't yet wrote a blog post. We haven't really been super vocal that it's available. But if you go to adaption.microsoft.com, if I go in the root in here, you can actually find two really cool different galleries which are now available. So one being the Partner Solution Gallery and one being the Extensibility Lookbook. And these are really intended to explain, first of all, the different partner solutions. So basically showcase partners and what kind of solution they're providing and what kind of capabilities those individual solutions are doing. So if I go to Lightning Tools, we can see all of the solutions what Lightning Tools is providing, and then you can go to an individual product details, but you'll get some information around the company. So really cool thing as well. By the way, for those who are wondering how to get listed in here, there is a submit your solution to this gallery in here as well. So if you're a partner looking into getting exposure of your products, please submit. We really want to have a one location where customers can go and have a look on, okay, so what kind of capabilities are available for my partner.
Is this only for ISVs or is it also for SIs who offer package services but not a product?
Yes, so this is also for SIs, so intended to be for them as well. Really kind of a showcasing the breadth of our partner ecosystem from a one location. So pretty cool scenarios as well. So, and you don't have to have your solution in AppSource to be able to list it in here. That's one of the things. So, and AppSource is a separate thing. This is for showcasing AppSource, then for installing and actually acquiring the solution. The other thing which is the new thing here is the Extensibility Lookbook. Like I said, we haven't really made a big fuss out of this one yet. We are finalizing and polishing the content, making it better. But this is actually really cool as well. It's intended to be a location where you can go and have a look on what are the extensibility options in the Microsoft 365. So as an example, you can have a look on this from a Microsoft Teams perspective, and it basically lists all of the different extensibility options. You can do the same from a SharePoint perspective. You can do the same from a OneDrive perspective, from an Office perspective. And of course, some of these are overlapping partly. Some of these are unique, like Office add-ins have the task panes, which are unique for Office add-ins. And then as one of these, you can basically go and have a look on more detailed. So if I go, let's go to apps in the Teams meeting. Let's go one step back. Dun, 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 dun. So apps in the Teams meeting, we can basically then get the links and information, sample solutions, samples, and then documentation around that capability, and also embedded videos and guidance and images and all of that stuff from one single location. That's really kind of intended to showcase what's possible in the Microsoft 365 level. And one thing I want to spend one more quick demo. So we're starting to collect here also scenarios, which are really, really cool. So these are actually intended to be technical visions, what can be built on top of the Microsoft 365 scenarios. And right now, most of these currently are focusing on the Microsoft Teams scenarios. So if you go to the cross-industry, we can then have, for example, employee onboarding. And then there's a storyline, which we basically walk through in here. So we're looking into making the picture slightly bigger so you can more easily read what's available. But there's basically a storyline related on the capabilities, what could be done. Really cool for the partners to kind of catch on of that, that's a great idea. And let me actually build a solution on that scenario and go forward from there. But we're highly interested in getting more feedback related on this one. So if something is missing and what's working and things which we need to do here. Good. Some other things. So on the Microsoft 365 community blog site, so Paul Bollock had a getting started with PMP Core SDK, which went GA last week. So it's now a 1.0 release is out, and it's .NET 5 and .NET Standard 2.0 support. So this is basically the replacement. Well, it's not a replacement. It's a completely modernized SDK for PMP Sites Core, and has capabilities like the Modern Pages API, which unfortunately pushing internally, but it's not yet in graph. Obviously, whenever it's in graph, it's going to be in graph as the primary thing. We would love to have everything in the graph, but it's not, unfortunately, reality at this point yet. This really walks through how to get started and how to use things and how do you authenticate and how to start using the components. Really, really great blog post from Paul on that. What else do we have? Getting started with SharePoint custom column formatting from Will Holland from Treewheel. Which is really cool as well. So how do you render stuff rather than that boring one in a more different way? Frodo, Hobbit, the Shire. Okay.
Plugins, well, yes. Yeah. 50,
why not? Why not?
50H. What?
So explaining how to get started on that one. So really cool capabilities as well, for sure. And then we had from Carrie Trinder, run CLI for Microsoft 365 in Docker. There is a video on this one as well. Did he reference that in here, maybe? Yes, he did. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Carrie. So cross-linking that from the YouTube channel as well. So walking through how to do that in practice. Really, really cool stuff as well. Then there was a from Louis Fries, 10 things you should know before we build an app. This is actually really good as well. So rather than always jumping from the technology, how do we actually look into that one step at a time? One step. Let's think what we do before doing.
No, code. That's code.
Yes. What problem is the app trying to solve? So really good thing to think through. Now, Luis had also a new blog post over in the M365 BMP blog around 5 commands try in CLI for Microsoft 365 to fall in love with it. Waldeck, are these the same 5 which you would be using, putting on a spot?
Probably not, because I'm doing different things for work. So
that's
like probably the one command that I would use still is enable CDN for 365. Yep. after all these years.
Yeah. The one where it all started. So.
But I guess that is actually the interesting point, right? There is so much in CLI that it's a tool for everybody, for an admin, for a dev, for power user, or a person that might not describe themselves as a dev, right? So it depends what you want to do. And it supports both modes where you can use it in scripts, but you can also use it as a tool to look up things quickly or just see like, hey, I want to get a list of my apps for a report.
Yeah. In the same way as, of course, as BMP PowerShell, and which we need to talk about that one, by the way, when we stop the articles, but hey. Because Veronique has been really active on the PMP PowerShell side of the house as well. Now, Elio also had a new blog post, a doctor maintaining a documentation on a SharePoint without pain, basically using the CLI. So this is integrated on CLI, isn't it?
Correct.
Yes. So, and then you generate the documentation from your code to SharePoint as pages.
Correct. So you store all of the content in Markdown. No way. Yeah, so for those who listen, we've just seen that Ilya wrote SharePoint with lowercase p in his article, and Vesa's like, what?
That hurts.
Maybe it's intentional, so it's okay.
So. Probably not, but anyway, yes.
But yeah, so this is really cool. Really cool automation for getting stuff documented, so. Absolutely great stuff. Then Michael Mallett had a init API permission for your SPFX project without deploying them. So this is basically a blog post article which he had on his own blog, but now also in the Microsoft 365 BMP blog to get some additional visibility for him as well. So walking through how do we grant those permissions and how can you use, I think we're using CLI in this case as well. Technically, you would be able to use the PowerShell as well to grant those permissions. Yes. So really cool. And then a last one is getting started with SharePoint framework. So this is a new thing. Can you talk about what is a SharePoint framework? Just you at least
that is new, not new, right?
The new, not new model.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is, right, that even though that is it has been now available for four years. Am I right?
Yeah.
Like there are still like every day new people start with that and they wonder like, okay, so where do I start? What frameworks can I use? What are resources? Where do I go? Do I go to YouTube? Do I go to Docs? So with that, I try to give a quick summary of what are the most important resources that I think you should start from. And then from there, like you have more than enough routes to go to depending on your personal preferences, how you learn, what things you come across, what are things you want to ask, and so forth and so on.
Yeah. It is actually, so the numbers are pretty wild. So there's more than 250 million users in Microsoft 365. I think Jeff was saying that there's more than 200 million SharePoint Online users every single month, which is pretty mind-blowing. That was in his Ignite talk. And I'm not going to expose any numbers on SPFX because I don't want to break any rules from the leadership, but I can say that there are more than tens of millions of monthly users of SharePoint Framework.
It's a lot. Makes perfect sense because if you think about it,
and like third-party extensibility,
exactly.
First party, yes.
Exactly. I guess so like that is a key point, right? Because if you think about it, about enterprises, right? Like typically, like enterprises are big and you can do a lot, but for many things, you need to have approvals, you need to have clearance, there is a bill to pick and so forth and so on.
True.
And many of these requirements are not applicable to SPFX because it already runs on SharePoint, it runs in browser, right? So it's like it's a very easy way to extend your environment to whatever you need, and actually a cool way also to expose the apps you built, not only in SharePoint, but also in Teams.
Yep. So absolutely. That was a good marketing statement. Thank you, Waldeck, on that one. So Paolo had a cool video related on BMP Core SDK. So basically how to get started on that one, because that went GA last week. Now that there's a multiple blog posts and videos on this one. But this is a good 14 minutes clarification what it is and how to get started as well on top of Paul and Balak's blog post. And then there was a good new video from Robert, second video related on the series on how to get started on the SharePoint framework. So a refresh video series. And these are actually really good. These are quite snackable. So they're kind of a 5 to 7 minutes, and then they concentrate on a point. So really kind of, and the style of the videos are pretty cool. So it's not just showing a screen, and there's much more editing on what's actually happening there. So a few more articles, migration reports with CLI for Microsoft 365 from Albert Jan Scott. He is one of the MVPs actively pushing CLI for Microsoft 365 or coordinating that work. So a really cool thing as well from him. We had an article from Sergey Sergeyev, building Outlook add-ins with SPFX Safe Mail to OneDrive with Azure Function, MSAL, MSCraft.net. The Outlook add-in with SPFX still, unfortunately, in preview. There's no decision that we would move that forward. Unfortunately, we would love to, but it's a decision which the office organization has to agree with. So because it's they own the clients. So, but good to see the interest. And this is a really cool story and end-to-end clarification of how things could be done. So really, really cool stuff. One of the things actually, what's the benefit out of, again, SPFX as an Outlook add-in would be that SPFX is actually being hosted in Microsoft 365. So last week I had a discussion with somebody who is working in GCC High, so the governmental cloud, and they cannot use anything which is outside of the cloud, outside of the governmental cloud. So they cannot use any Office add-ins if they're being hosted somewhere else. But
wow.
If we would have SPFX support for this, that would be suitable. So it's an interesting interesting reminder on the power of that as well. Exporting external users with CLI for Microsoft 365. Let me actually put that one from Albert from Scott as well. So good reminders and the scripts, what he is sharing in his blog post on those. And then there was a good video discussion in episode 46 for Microsoft 365 Voice with Sarah and then Mike and
Antonio.
Yes, thank you.
Every time.
Pretty much every time. Sudo use a default label with Microsoft Information Protection MIP and what it is and how to get started. And then the last one is from Wanda Laura, SharePoint form conditional formula. So how can we do conditional formulas on SharePoint forms, which is really, really cool. So there's more and more capabilities on the SharePoint lists and forms pretty much every single week. Really hard to keep up to date on all of that stuff as well. So really cool.
Cool.
Now let's stop actually that one and stop presentation. And then Veronique, let's talk about your role in the BMP PowerShell. You've been contributing actively on that, right?
Yeah. I mean, BMP PowerShell, I'm not a dev, I'm an admin. So BMP PowerShell just helped me not using CSUM. Everything is done for me as an admin. That's what I want. And I'm used to PowerShell. So that's, you know, it's kind of love at first sight, you know?
Yep.
So because it helped me a lot, that's why I continued. And yeah, being part of the PNP PowerShell repo, maintainer and things like that, I really appreciate that, yeah.
Yeah. Irvin has been doing a really awesome job on that, and that's being used with tens of thousands of tenants every single month. It's just mind-blowing. And especially the new version with PowerShell Core, that's actually works cross-platform as well. But to be fair, I don't know, so what's the thinking? So Waldeck, especially you're a Mac person, would you use PowerShell Core in your Mac? Or is it how widely is PowerShell Core or .NET PowerShell,
so that is an
the
interesting
Core
thing.
Being adapted?
So that is an interesting thing, right? So for one, like majority of our use in CLI comes from Windows. So it's like it's not like you miss anything on Windows, and yet like some people prefer to use that tool over other, right? So if you think about PowerShell versus Bash, like the Linux or the shell that you get on Mac and Linux, is a pretty old thing. Like everything is a string, which like for a command to run a command, it's fine. But the moment you have an object like an array and you want to iterate through that, it's a hell on earth. Like it's just right there with regex and time zones.
Yeah.
It's in the same spot, right? So
time zones are not actually this
week
they're really bad.
The moment you try to convert daylight saving times across different time zones, good luck with that. And some areas are on. Well, no.
Yeah. This week is a good example. So US went to the daylight savings, Europe didn't. So yet. We're going to move in 2 weeks. So.
Exactly. Right. So I guess with that, like if you think about it a few years back, it was a USB for CLI. They said, okay, this is a thing you can do across any OS. Like that's gone now. And then the difference, okay, so if you are a PowerShell person, like you will default to that, which is perfectly fine. But then on the other hand, like if you, for example, compare it to CLI that we have on Azure, like, even in PowerShell, most folks use CLI over commandlets or Azure. So it's a kind of weird dynamic, like why people do that. Maybe there is just the way they think. Maybe there is something that is available in one and not the other. Maybe it's just a personal preference. I don't know. Like the one thing that I know for sure is that there's enough cake for everybody.
That's true. Absolutely. And I think I still remember back in 2010 when we introduced PowerShell support for SharePoint. I think it was 2010, probably it was. That was a evil scheme for forcing administrators to learn how to write code. So were we successful, Veronique? What's your take on that?
I think that's. I know a little bit of HTML, CSS because I was doing that before, but. PowerShell is as close as I can be of, you know, scripting or coding something because I don't know. I have some interest in JavaScript, but I'm at the very, very, very beginning. I tried C# twice, but my brain says no. So I was like, okay. but that's, you know, that's the closest thing for me to be coding something, automating something. So been successful.
And it's super easy for sure. And that's now that there are so many PowerShell script and modules which are making everything super, super easy. So
yeah.
And it's such a typical scenario. You need to automate, get reports once a day or once a week or whatever, and then you need to have something running somewhere. So
yeah, or like you need a list of users from sites. and then and not from one, but from all of them, and you have a lot of them. So like, you will not like go clicking through all of them. Like that just doesn't make any sense. So yeah, hence PowerShell.
Now, what's happening this week? Anything interesting, Veronica, on your side before we're closing up? What you can talk about? So working remotely from home, that's a tick. So
I think the good thing was obviously the release for the BMP PowerShell at 1.4. The discussions that we have, on how to make things better and easier and things like that. Other than that, no. Probably the MVP summit at the end of the month.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
But
yes. I'm just coordinating the office developer track. So, but it's invites have been already sent. So should be good.
So I think that's basically it.
And all of the four MVPs were wondering, you should get access on the registration list starting this week. So for MVP Summit, unless that hasn't happened. I think it's actually starting from today when we're recording this. So when you're watching this, it might have actually been gone for many, many years, because depending on when you're watching this from internet. What's happening on my side? We are seriously planning to release SharePoint Framework 1.12. It's just been pretty awkward. delay. But again, and people are getting in hesitant on that one, but it's coming now after this week. Right now it's planned to come out on this week, unless there's a really last minute surprises. First of all, we didn't want to don't ship on Friday, and then a Monday is not a good time for ship. So you can kind of then predict that it's going to happen on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. So we almost did it on last Friday, but then we didn't want to break the rule. Do not ship on Friday.
Ship on Friday. Okay.
Yeah. Why don't we ship on Friday?
I have no idea. Like we're shipping every day on Saturday, Sunday, whatever. Like for us.
Well, the number one reason why I don't want to ship. There's two reasons why not ship on Friday. It depends obviously what you're shipping and how the system is automated and all of that. But one of the reasons is that if you're shipping on Friday as the last thing, like Friday 4 p.m., you're pressing a button on shipping, and yes, I'm all done. And then you head to the home. Well, you're working from home, but you're kind of trying to concentrate on weekend, and then stuff starts going sideways, and then your weekend is ruined. That's one reason. So people don't ruin your employees' weekend by shipping on Friday, because that might backfire due to regressions. You never know. The second thing is also the visibility. If you're shipping a product on Friday and then you go to the social media like 4 p.m. or Friday evening Pacific time saying, yes, we're now out.
Well, but having worked in product, there is a way about it. There is shipping and there is the marketing announcement, and they can be separate.
But if you don't do the marketing and the announcement, the primary announcement at the same time as you're shipping, then you basically give the opportunity for some MVP or random external person to be the person who claims the announcement. Want to do that, because then there's automation. So as an example, Elio has an automation. Whenever we ship a new version of SPFX, his Twitter tweets are basically catching that automatically. It's probably a flow which is catching that. And then, hey, there's a new version. and then you would actually miss that announcement moment. So again, it's dealing with all of this stuff as well. So trying to figure out. But anyway, this week, it is March.
You see, people who automate are not always helpful.
Yeah. Anyway. No. It's actually good. It's good that people are automating stuff. Waldeck, what's happening on your side?
Learn is big thing for me this week. So we have a module on Learn on the Microsoft Graph Toolkit that's coming out somewhere soon. It's ready. It's wrapped. It's ready for going out. Then we have another one. Then we have another set of modules about graph. So basically explaining you what is graph, why would you care, how to use it, how to start, and so forth, and so on. So that's coming out shortly. Beginning of April, we will have another event about graph, comparable to the event that we had in December about Teams.
Yep.
So stay tuned for more updates about that. And other than that, we have some more things about Learn. So that is for work. And then on CLI, we're building new things, improving, enhancing, adding scripts, trying to help people to understand what's available, what's possible, what they can do. So that is still ongoing. And we ship every day.
Every day. Every day.
Every day we can ship, right? There are days when there is nothing to ship, or where we don't have time because life and work.
There we go.
But we could, like, feeling like we don't pick a day. Oh wait, no, it's already 5 p.m. We don't ship. No,
I think the same thing. The same thing happens with PMP PowerShell as well nowadays, that there's an automatic builds and all of that stuff. Yeah. Which by the way makes perfect sense because you can easily do then automatic testing and validation and all of that stuff. So absolutely makes sense. Now, but anyway, let's close up for the day. So thank you, Veronique, for joining us. We'll be coming back. And thank you, everybody, for listening or watching, depending on the format you're choosing. And we'll be back with the new PMP Weekly within a week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.